Keeping Democracy Alive with Bert Cohen.
Check for pulse. Stand clear. Push to shock.
So, yes, there's a huge gap between public opinion and public policy. That people don't feel that they can do very much.
You know what this is? This is a very Hamiltonian system. Alexander Hamilton being the guy here in a very un-Jeffersonian.
In the case of the Republicans, it's dramatically the opposite. But even in the case of the Democrats.
An absolute typhoon of terror against African Americans in the South.
America's fascists are those people who think that Wall Street comes first and the American people come second.
Really seen as a financial sector that's gotten out of hand.
The shooting, the violence, that is not the drug problem. That is, in fact, the drug policy problem.
I speak tonight for the dignity of man.
Some great voices in there. That was an old president who, aside from his little war in Vietnam, really did a pretty good job and was an unquestioned Democrat, a traditional Democrat, an FDR Democrat, Lyndon Baines Johnson. I don't know how long-term history will remember him, but he tried. He tried, and he was very much supported in his election of 1964. Every 4 years, there is a convention system that happens in both parties, and both parties have a lot of hoopla, balloons dropping, just a few speeches, and nominate our presidential candidates. In 2016, the two candidates nominated are Donald Trump, believe it or not, I have a hard time believing that, and Hillary Clinton for the Democratic side. And I'm very pleased that I was able to be there during the convention, along with our guest today, Kurt Ehrenberg, who was working very much on the Bernie Sanders campaign. What was your title with the Sanders campaign?
I was the political director.
Political director for the state of New Hampshire.
Correct.
And for the record, we did exceedingly well here. We did exceedingly well. We won by 22 points, and I have to give credit where it's due. I think Kurt Ehrenberg had a heck of a lot to do with that, and we had an amazing ground campaign, and it was just terrific. Thank you, Kurt.
We had a great team. We had obviously had a great candidate, and Bert, thanks for all you did on the steering committee, and all the volunteers who work so hard here in New Hampshire and across the country. Thank you, and the revolution goes on. Keep an eye open, keep your ears open, because there'll be plenty of opportunities for folks to continue to work hard for the issues that our campaign works so hard on.
Well, you jump ahead right to a question that I was eventually going to get to, that we tried really hard. A lot of money was raised in an average contribution of $27. And Bernie wasn't the nominee. Hillary Clinton was the nominee. Is it over for Bernie now that the nomination process is complete and Hillary Clinton is the nominee? What happens to Bernie? What happens to the movement?
Well, in terms of the presidential campaign, that is over. And that came to an end on Tuesday evening when the roll call votes were counted and Hillary Clinton became the nominee of the party. But as I said, Bernie is setting up an organization that will continue the revolution and run folks for office, support good candidates, and continue to travel around the country and help out. I mean, I think Bernie will be helping out in Florida to help out that congressional race.
Tim Canova.
That's right, against Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
And that's a close one right now.
It's getting closer, I think, after the events of last week. So,
yeah,
the revolution goes on. Bernie Sanders is a leader. He's a historic leader at this point.
Yes.
Ran a historic presidential campaign. I think we'll see in the future that Bernie Sanders will be credited for transforming the campaign finance system in terms of how money is raised. No super PAC. No large corporations, no billionaire donors.
Right.
As you said, Bert, an average contribution of 27 dollars and millions of folks contributing across the country. So
yeah,
truly grassroots, truly historic and revolutionary. So we'll continue to work on it.
And I think it's fair to say that in the 1990s, when the Democratic Leadership Council came into the Democratic Party, their plan was to get money, to raise money, because it takes a heck of, I don't know how much Bernie raised and spent, and now, of course, it'll cost, I don't know, possibly $1 billion or something like that between now and the election. And the Democratic Leadership Council made a change in the party. They figured, well, you need money, so let's go where the money is. The people who are already rich and powerful kind of took over the party, it seems to me. And I can't imagine that in the 1990s anybody could have imagined that there'd be that much support so that average minimal, you know, just small contributions could actually raise serious money. And they did. And it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. And I think that transformation that we're talking about in the 90s did leave a lot of the traditional Democratic constituencies behind.
Yes.
Working people, labor, you know, small constituencies that are basically economically disadvantaged.
Yeah.
And it turned off a lot of young people. It, you know, it became a sort of an insular corporate Republican light party in many ways. So I think that's one thing that our campaign did do, was bring back a lot of those traditional Democrats into the fold and show them that they still do have a voice and there is a way to do it. And I think if you look at the platform that came out of Philadelphia, it was the most progressive platform because of Bernie Sanders' influence.
In so many ways. And if you just tuned in, Bert Cohen here. Keeping Democracy Alive is the show, and our guest is Kurt Ehrenberg, who was political director of the Bernie Sanders New Hampshire effort, which was, again, we won by 22 points. I was hoping for 15 points, and we got 22 points. That was lovely. That was really fantastic.
I was hoping for 1 point at the time. So.
Well, you and I, May 27th, 2015, Bernie Sanders had his first reasonably large event in New Hampshire in Portsmouth, and you and I were working on that, and we were worried that we wouldn't get enough people there. We did.
We had to move the event from the basement of the South Church up into the sanctuary because
it's just too big.
We could fill it, and we did, and it was a great day, and it was hot as hell in there.
That's true. I don't know.
But we've come a long way from there.
Okay, and talk about hot as hell. Philadelphia was incredibly hot and humid, and it was one of the not-so-bright points was the ground transportation system. The bus drivers, as it turns out, they didn't know Philadelphia at all. They just knew Cleveland. They had just come from Cleveland. And people had to wait outside, oftentimes, not knowing where the heck to go. And it was exceedingly hot. But inside the convention hall, the air was good. They blew in a lot of cold air. It was really quite lovely atmosphere in general. As you know, every 4 years, each party has a convention. Why? What are the purposes of these conventions?
Well, traditionally, it was truly a nominating convention where, you know, let's talk about smoke-filled rooms and things like that, where the party bosses would get together and figure out who their best nominee would be. And it was actually very far from a foregone conclusion when you got there. So it was truly brokering, you know, real political horse trading. And you traded, and sometimes you had multiple ballots before you reached a decision on nominee. And it would be quite cantankerous and, you know, not a love fest like we see, hopefully, that the parties like to have now in their eyes, hopefully. But, you know, it's been, over the last few decades, transformed into basically an infomercial.
True. And
you know, in the it's been decades since there was truly
contested
a contested convention. I mean,
yeah, I'm trying to think when the last one may have been.
We're not I'm not prepared to go through convention history
right now. No, no.
But I mean, you think of 1968 Democrats in Chicago.
That was contested.
You know, that was contested, and there were protests and police riots and things like that. And, you know, we haven't seen anything like that since then, I don't think.
Not that I can
but
remember.
But the Republicans in 1976 had a contested convention between Ronald Reagan and
Gerald Ford.
And Ford came out on top of that one. Reagan won 4 years later. So, you know, it has happened. There was, you know, a slight issue at the first day, the first rules vote at the Republican convention this year, where there was some, you know, our former U.S. Senator Gordon Humphrey called the Trump people brown shirts, and because of the way they gaveled through the rules without a vote. And but after that, I guess things kind of smoothed out for the Donald, and as far as I can tell, he's the Republican nominee and going to go down to a huge defeat. Huge defeat.
Let us pray.
That's what I'm looking at. You know, I've been wrong before. I could be wrong, but maybe it's just a hopeful prediction. But you know, we're in the one week since the beginning of the Democratic National Convention, and right. Already Donald has both feet in his mouth, and you know, it's the candidate that couldn't shoot straight. So when he shoots on Fifth Avenue, it probably doesn't hit anybody.
Yeah, just himself. It is absolutely remarkable. And you did know your convention history. I'm impressed there. You said you didn't want to go there, but you knew it anyway. I couldn't remember. I remembered in 64, the Republican National Convention had, you know, many, many candidates and finally settled on Barry Goldwater, who went down to ignominious defeat. I think that's the word. Hopefully Trump will as well. People do vote for him. And, you know, there was a lot of hoopla. It was hot outside the hall. A lot of speeches. I don't know how many hours, if you were to measure how many hours of speeches there were. Who at the Democratic Convention, that's what we're talking about here on Keeping Democracy Alive, gave some of the best speeches, do you think, the most memorable speeches of all the hundreds of hours?
Well, I think clearly in terms of effectiveness and, you know, playing into this week, the cons,
yes.
parents of the fallen soldier, made a huge impact, continue to make a huge impact. Clearly that was an emotional and compelling
and
speech.
For those who might not be familiar with it, these were, correct me if I'm wrong, because I did have to leave the convention a little early, they were the parents, a Gold Star mother of a son who died in Iraq.
Yes.
And they're Muslims.
Muslims of Pakistani origin who, you know, they're citizens, and their son was a soldier and unfortunately lost his life in the Iraq War. And courageously they got up to speak mostly about Donald Trump. And Trump couldn't leave it alone. And so now we're...
Absolutely, just beyond belief. I mean, that's one of the speeches I remember. Somebody, I'm not sure who it was, maybe you remember, who was using like sign language, talking about deaf speak, and showed the sign language word for America, and it was like hugging your two hands together and including everybody. That was very impressive. I don't remember who gave that speech and talked about that, but that's what
I don't remember.
Yeah. That's what it was.
I mean,
you might have been in line for a sandwich. There were some long lines.
In a lot of ways, I think, you know, watching it at home gives you not a better perspective on it necessarily, but you have a better chance of seeing the speeches you want to see. I mean, there's other business going on. And,
yeah.
You know, it's different. It's a different experience being in the hall than it is watching on television.
And the amazing thing about that con speech was... It's so comparison with Trump, who has, he's clearly, I don't think one could argue that he's not bigoted against Muslims and doesn't understand that ISIS is killing more Muslims and threatening more Muslims than anybody else, and that these Muslims are patriots. Absolutely. I mean, just like everybody, you know, liberal, Jew, Catholic, Zoroastrian, we're Americans. And Trump doesn't get that. And I think, I agree, I think that was the most powerful point. Other speeches that I thought were really good were Michelle Obama's speech was quite good.
Absolutely.
Of course, Joe Biden, as always, knocks it out of the park. And our nominee didn't do too badly either.
No, I was going to say, I think, you know, two of the best speeches were two of the people who had to give the best speeches, which was President Obama.
Yes.
Gave a terrific speech, as he usually does.
Oh, yeah.
And Secretary Clinton, I think, gave the speech of her life and did what she had to do. And, you know, as someone sitting on the floor listening to her, you know, one thing that struck me was it was really, not only was it so well delivered, but she didn't go that long. So,
people,
you
like
know,
that.
Brevity has its place in these things. And Donald Trump spoke for, I don't know, an hour and a half or something.
Somehow I missed his speech.
And
I knew I wasn't going to vote for him.
You know, Hillary's speech was just what the doctor ordered, I think, for that crowd. And, you know, for Bernie folks and for Bernie Sanders himself, I think the convention went extremely well.
Yeah.
The speakers, including the president, Secretary Clinton, made sure to mention Bernie's contribution to the party and, you know, and sort of let folks know and let Bernie know how much they appreciated what he'd accomplished. And it helped bring everyone together, I think. You know, it's still going to take some time for some people.
Yes, it will.
And some people may never get there. But I think the large majority of Bernie supporters understand the importance of not voting for a third-party candidate. Those of us who remember the 2000 election where Al Gore would have been elected president on election night without any problems or contests. If New Hampshire had gone for Al Gore and the votes that Ralph Nader got in New Hampshire had been Gore votes,
Florida wouldn't have mattered.
Wouldn't have mattered. So I think you got to really think twice before you vote for anyone but Hillary Clinton if you don't want to see Donald Trump become president.
And Kurt Ehrenberg, you had a terrific line about the choice. No, I guess we won't go there. yeah, trust me on that one. I do want to ask about, you know, there were some great speeches and people, the party, I think America is always looking to see who's an up and comer. I was at the convention in 1988 when Dukakis was the nominee and he was 17 points ahead at the time of the convention. We all thought, I mean, he focused, unfortunately, on winning the primary and I don't think they were focused nearly enough on winning the general election. But that's water over the dam, whatever. But the up-and-comer back then was Bill Clinton. He gave a heck of a speech. It was a little long.
It was very long.
It was extremely long. And I remember everybody cheering, saying, and finally, as soon as he said, and finally, everybody cheered. Were there any, you know, and we're looking for possible up-and-comers, you know, because there's going to be another convention. There's going to be, hopefully, another presidential election. Who do you think, I mean, there's so many different people spoke for it. I'm trying to remember who it was that nominated Bernie Sanders. As I recall, she made a really good speech. Was that Tulsi Gabbard?
Tulsi Gabbard did speak, and I think she was one of the people that nominated Bernie.
And she's a member of Congress from Hawaii, I believe.
That's right, from Hawaii. She's a veteran of, I believe it's the Iraq War. She's fairly young. She's very articulate, and she's very progressive, which is why she had the guts early to be one of the only,
right,
you know, elected representatives, national representatives, to endorse Bernie Sanders. So, I think, and I did comment to someone as she was speaking, she could be a president of the United States someday.
Yeah, she's very good. So watch Tulsi, T-U-L-S-I, Gabbard, G-A-B-B-A-R-D.
Yep, congresswoman from Hawaii.
She's got this amazing presence, which, you know, a lot of the conventions, hey, it's showbiz.
Oh, absolutely. And this convention was clearly showbiz. Oh. The set was amazing. I mean, it looked great on television, but it just was just amazing to watch the clockwork of that convention. They didn't miss a beat.
Yeah.
It was Hollywood. And it came off without a hitch.
It did.
Even bringing the musical acts on and off the stage, you can sit there and watch how many people and how intricate their jobs are, and they got those things on and off, and you know, it was incredible. Just the technical aspect of the whole thing was just
a fabulous Hollywood production, and the videos were phenomenal.
Yeah, I love those short little Trump videos that they showed in between things. They're like 10-second things of just Trump saying something and some little comment typed on the stage, but it just made these points about how
there's a little difference.
There's a little craziness going on here. So I thought the convention was extremely well put together and well run. Another person who mentioned as an up-and-comer who actually spoke to the New Hampshire delegation was Senator Cory Booker from New Jersey. He was being considered for VP, didn't make it, but I think that he clearly is someone who has what it takes, has a great track record as mayor of Newark, New Jersey, and then getting elected to the U.S. Senate, I think is poised to do great things and be a leader for the Democratic Party in the U.S. Senate and beyond.
Yeah, this is like a sort of a way to get schooled, a way to get some public attention, to test yourself on the floor of the convention. And again, he spoke to the New Hampshire delegation.
Yeah, and Tim Kaine, who is the vice presidential nominee, clearly is an up-and-comer. You know, I think there's a good chance he'll be the vice president.
Oh, yeah, and to very good chance.
Yeah, and
and then
he's doing a good job so far, so...
He is, and whether Bernie people were thrilled with the choice of Tim Kaine or not, you know, she's making her choices here, and it's all very strategic. You know, where are the votes? They look at the numbers. There's a lot of math, I'm sure, that's going on here. I don't know if you want to mention any of the worst speeches.
You know, I couldn't really come up with any. I don't think if you can. We could talk about it if you have any in mind. I'm not adverse to doing that.
Not really. I don't know. I mean, it does sort of all blend together. So many hours.
Just it does. But I have to mention, you know, my favorite speech was Bernie's speech.
And well,
that was Monday night, and that was the last speech of the first day. And he just gave a terrific speech and laid out where we need to go in this country and what our campaign was about, and
what the movement's still about.
Absolutely. But the other thing that Bernie did was he said we need to vote for Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
We need to elect her president of the United States. And I think, you know, those of us who were there in Portsmouth a few weeks ago when Bernie endorsed Hillary for the first time, it just shows the integrity of the man that he understands that he has a role to play now to make sure that Donald Trump doesn't get to be president of the United States.
Yes.
And to stay relevant and to be able to be in a position to move this revolution forward after the election. He has to be a team player now.
Yeah.
He can't be out there, you know, making trouble, because it is an extremely important election. Yep. And, you know, perfect is the enemy of the good, and we need to win this election.
That is a phrase that can't be emphasized enough. The perfect can be the enemy of the good, and we can't have that. No, we just can't have that. And Bernie was not technically a Democrat before he ran in 2016. What's he going to do now? Some people have suggested, you know, he'd be a very good Democratic leader in the Senate, hopefully a majority leader in the Senate. Do we know? Is he going to stay as a Democrat? I mean, to me, he is where the party used to be. I mean, he's the party of FDR. He represents the Democratic traditions. But do we know what he's going to do party-wise now?
Well, he was elected by the voters of Vermont to serve as an independent in the United States Senate.
Yes.
So I would expect that he will not serve as a Democrat. He will probably run for re-election in 2 years.
Ah. That seems likely.
And we'll, yeah, I think that's pretty much of a given at this point.
Yeah.
Given any unforeseen circumstances. But so we'll see if he wants to run as a Democrat that time around. But I think the people of Vermont are used to electing him as an independent.
Well, the people of Vermont are pretty independent.
That's right.
You know, it's their character.
You know, we had a small issue with Bernie getting on the New Hampshire primary ballot as a Democrat. He was contested by some person who really is not from New Hampshire but pretended to be. And that was thrown out pretty quickly.
Yeah.
You know, so Bernie ran as a Democrat. And I think he was accepted into the Democratic Party pretty universally.
Not everybody did, as we know. But
you know, I mean, there's always going to be people who use that as an excuse who, you know, were very much for another candidate that wanted to look for any reason.
Right.
And that's politics, you know. That's what goes on in a political campaign, you know. What's
a little bit different, I think, this year, and I want to ask about how it played itself out at the convention that you saw, is that, the process was rigged. It was. We know that for a fact now. The emails that had been shown on WikiLeaks show that the party, which has always, to my memory, been studiously neutral, has always been really neutral between the candidates. They took a side. They did, and they fought against Bernie. And I wonder about how that played itself out at the convention. People were worried that there'd be some stuff at the convention. I mean, the party intelligently, wisely pulled off Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who was chair, who would clearly have been booed very, very substantially. She was not, and that was smart. I've heard all kinds of stories. People say, well, other signs were not allowed in. They had to be official signs. And that, I think, is true because for security reasons.
Right. You couldn't bring signs in. There were some people that, I think mostly Bernie supporters, who were, you know, opposed to the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal.
Yes.
That the president is in favor of. So that's a little tricky. But they snuck some signs in. No TPP.
Oh, yeah.
And there were some demonstrations on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
I think fairly small, but somewhat effective. So, you know, that people were able to exercise their right to free speech, and that's a good thing.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, people weren't able to bring signs in. There were a lot of restrictions in terms of the security screening, which is one of the logistical things that I think went fairly smoothly. You know, we've heard stories in past conventions of people lining up for hours to try to get through security, and we didn't have that problem.
Oh, true.
It was pretty smooth once you got onto the grounds, you got off your bus. Things went pretty smoothly. And
yeah, the buses.
The buses were hard, but we got around.
We did, and I think there were, as I recall, two levels of security, which was fine. It flowed very, and you have to have security, unfortunately. I mean, it was real. I had heard stories, and as I recall, sitting in the New Hampshire delegation, the California delegation, far to our left, so to speak, made a lot of noise. They made a lot of noise, and they seemed to be pretty much all for Bernie. And
well, it's funny because you know, Hillary won the California primary. So she had more delegates. It was just that the Bernie delegates had a point to make, and the Hillary delegates didn't have, you know, I mean, there was no point of contention from Hillary delegates at that convention. It was just all pro-Hillary. But
I had heard, and I don't know if you know anything about this, that since they had made so much noise that some force put in on reserve signs, that a lot of the seats that had been the California delegates, there were suddenly reserve signs trying to get people not to sit there, and some noise canceling device allegedly was put in. I don't know if there's any truth to that at all. I mean, you know, things on the internet aren't always accurate.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but I do know that there was some organized effort to entice Bernie delegates to join into some chanting, join into some, you know, walking out after Hillary was nominated. It was not as widespread as I thought it might have been.
Right.
After, you know, Bernie spoke to all of the Bernie delegates all at once on Monday afternoon at the convention center, which is different than the arena where the convention was held. And there was some, when Hillary's name came up and Bernie was saying, you know, we're going to support Hillary Clinton, or he is anyway, there were some boos from some of the folks that were gathered there, who were not all delegates. That was the plan, but many people who were not delegates got into the room, I believe. And so I was somewhat concerned as someone who wanted a harmonious evening when Bernie spoke. We didn't want to see Bernie booed or anything by his own delegates.
Yeah, really.
I was somewhat concerned before that speech that what happened in the afternoon would carry over into the evening, but it didn't. It didn't, and Bernie was well received by everyone, and I think he deserved that, and I'm glad that that's the way that turned out.
And there were, I mean, the Democratic Party, whoever was in charge of passing out signs, they were all different signs. And I hope, I mean, there were so many different signs. I hope the heck they were recycled. I have no idea.
Well, whoever was the printer in Philadelphia was a bonanza, windfall. Because so many signs being held just for like, you know, hold this sign for 2 minutes after someone speaks or during Joe Biden speaks, you know. Signs that said Joe, signs that said Scranton, you know.
Scranton?
I mean, Joe Biden from Scranton, but...
Oh, right. I was thinking Scranton in 64.
No, it's...
it was a fairly liberal...
Signs for everything.
Everything.
I mean, yeah, so it was fun. I mean, it's conventions are supposed to be fun, I guess, these days. You know, we were talking about the old days when it really had to do a lot of business.
Yes.
And now the convention is, if it's run the way the party officials want it to be run, everything is decided before the delegates arrive. And that's the way it was here for the most part. And
well, the platform was done just about, as I recall, a week or so before the convention. And as you say, I can't imagine it was the platform that Hillary expected to do and the centrists expected. It's a very liberal, traditional Democratic platform. And it doesn't, I mean, the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, there's room for improvement there. And I think one of the things that most Bernie delegates hopefully realize is that, I mean, obviously, Trump, forget about it. You can't even think about that. But that Hillary, if we have a Democratic majority and a Democratic president, we can keep up the pressure. The pressure worked. The pressure has, it is, there is some democracy left here and there. And we got, you know, there was a loud voice from the Bernie movement. And it worked. We got a really good progressive platform in there. And what happened to, do you know anything about this? Nina Turner, who was supposed to make a speech, do you know anything about that? She was a Bernie supporter and somehow...
Yeah, I mean, Senator Turner, former state senator from Illinois, was a early Bernie supporter, elected official type person who became one of the campaign's major surrogates. She's African-American, so that helped with outreach
to that community,
and other minority communities, which we needed some work on at the beginning of the campaign. So I don't know why she didn't speak, but I do know that she was considered or has been considering running as the Green Party vice presidential candidate. She had yesterday said she wasn't going to do that.
That's good.
She's not running as vice president for the Green Party, I think, which is
smart.
A good idea for her.
Because, yeah. For her personally, I think it is a good idea. For the country, it's a very good idea as well.
I'm totally sympathetic, just personally, to say that, you know, with the issues that the Green Party is trying to put forward, no question about it, they're extremely important that we... We have to do something about climate change. We have to do it yesterday. Mm-hmm. And all the other issues that the Green Party stands for, which is more than just environmental issues. But this is not the year to take votes away from the Democratic nominee in the face of a tyrannical malicious,
racist, on and on,
egoist, you know. So it's just too much at stake here to
and
take
given,
your vote and give it to someone who can't win.
Yeah, and given the lesson of Nader, I mean, it's true, as people say, Gork didn't even win his home state. True. That's true. But the fact that Nader took votes from Gore in New Hampshire cost us George W. Bush, and we got an Iraq war.
And all that went with that, and what we're still dealing with.
Yeah. It's way too much of a risk, I think.
But I do have to say, in the end, the election was stolen from Al Gore. He really did win Florida, and they just took it away from him because,
yes,
you know, Bush's brother was governor, controlled the Secretary of State, and the Supreme Court ultimately made the decision on a partisan basis.
Yeah, it was stolen. It was absolutely stolen.
So,
yeah.
Just saying.
Well, it's true. And it reminds me of the election selection of 1876 when it was stolen as well. I mean, they were actually military. It was ugly. It was really ugly. And what happened in Florida it wasn't a democracy. If you just tuned in, Bert Cohen here. The show is Keeping Democracy Alive. It's a group effort. Our guest today is Kurt Ehrenberg, who was a political director for the amazingly successful New Hampshire effort for Bernie. The reality of unity. You were concerned. I was concerned about possible walkouts when Hillary got the nomination. I was surprised at how little of that there was. What do you make of that? I mean, there was, and I could see in the press, I was worried that the press was going to focus on that. The media cameras were all going to focus on these few people walking out of the convention. What did you make of that, and how impactful do you think that minor walkout was?
Well, I think there were some, not that many, that did decide to walk out. That's you know, their right to do so. I think the right-wing media really wanted that to happen and is still trying to build this myth that it did happen on a larger scale, but it really didn't. I think that's a tribute to Bernie, that people actually listen to what Bernie says, even though they don't have to. People can do what they want.
They can.
But I think the respect that Bernie has engendered from not only our supporters, but the whole country, whether you agree with him on the issues or not, you know, people really came to know, like, and respect Senator Sanders for how he conducts himself, sort of the anti-politician politician, someone you can trust, and not say one thing and do another. But, you know, what you see is what you get. What he says to you is what he really believes.
Yeah.
And he has never wavered from his message for over 30 years, you know, since he's been mayor of Burlington, Vermont, and a congressman and senator.
I mean, I saw him speak in 2004. It was basically the same speech, which is wonderful. And I think young people get that, young people in particular. It was amazing. I don't know about you, but I didn't expect this wave of young people to just be enthralled with Bernie Sanders, but they were. What's your sense of, is the party reaching out not only to young people, but to the Bernie people? My sense is maybe they're thinking, well, where are they going to go? So they're reaching out to disaffected Republicans, which may be a good strategy. I don't know. But this young people's energy, which was fantastic, do you see the party reaching out for that? Are they going to be plugged in? Is that energy going to be used in the 2016 election?
Well, I think, you know, it was a very good sign that the Clinton campaign hired the student outreach coordinator.
No, I didn't know that.
From New Hampshire for the Bernie Sanders campaign. Kanor Oja is her name, and she did a terrific job for us here. And now she's working in Brooklyn, New York. That's the Clinton national headquarters, to turn out students across the country. And They also hired, as a labor outreach person, Michelle Gilliam, who worked closely with me here in New Hampshire on constituency issues in the political department. And so they are reaching out to some of the folks that worked for Bernie's campaign on these youth, labor, some of the areas where I think Hillary can use help.
Yeah.
And I do think, you know, they are making an effort to reach out to young people and bring them in, but I think it's a real challenge for traditional politicians, as Bernie called them, establishment politicians.
Right.
It's just there is an impediment there. So the idea of the political revolution and the Bernie Sanders organization that's being formed now is to encourage new people to run for office in the local level.
Yes.
It's not just, you know, let's support Congressman so-and-so. I mean, we love Carol Shea Porter, and we're going to work hard to...
Congressperson from this part of New Hampshire.
See that she gets elected back to her old seat in the first district of New Hampshire. But really, what the revolution is about, I think, is bringing new people in who aren't tied to that old so-called political establishment. And that's what Bernie's message has been about all for over a year now, and it's been so effective. But I think the messenger is important. So Bernie was the right messenger for that.
Yes.
I think we need to do as much as we can to help Secretary Clinton be that messenger. And I think her speech on Thursday night is a really good start.
It is a good start. And again, if you just tuned in, Bert Cohen here. The show is Keeping Democracy Alive. Our guest today, Kurt Ehrenberg, political director of the New Hampshire effort for Bernie. We're talking about the convention, the just completed Democratic convention, what worked, what didn't work, what still has to be done. Is Bernie going to go? I mean, he was a great show. Let's face it. I mean, just it was electrifying. And there'd always be huge crowds, I should say, for Bernie. Do you know, is he going to be, I mean, he deserves some time off, let's face it. Is he going to go out there and try to, you know, connect with young people and try to get the vote out for Hillary and the down ticket?
Well, he has said that he will, and I believe what he says, so I think he will.
That's one thing about Bernie. You can believe what he says. He said right in the beginning he would support the Democratic nominee. And he did.
Yeah. No, I think that the Clinton campaign will work with Bernie to figure out where the best places for him to go in terms of demographics and, you know, the states that are close, the battleground states, and where he can make a difference, whether it's on campuses. Probably that's a good bet that he'll visit a lot of campuses this fall.
I hope so.
And rally the students to get out and vote for the ticket. And I think he can be effective that way. You know, Bernie's movement includes, you know, free tuition to public colleges and universities. And that actually was adopted by Hillary Clinton on the platform.
Yeah, which is great.
Which is a huge victory for us. You know, there's a cap on family income, but that family income cap is $125,000. So that's pretty high.
That's pretty fair.
So people who make over that would have to pay some money for tuition, but anyone whose family makes less than $125,000 a year, which is a whole lot of people in this country.
A whole lot of people,
are going to be able to go to school free if we can get this thing passed. So that is the challenge after we elect the next president.
Mm-hmm. To keep it going.
And how do we win these down-ticket races? How do we elect Maggie Hassan instead of Kelly Ayotte, and how do we put Carol Shea Porter back in office? And those races are going to be so important because, as we know, the last 8 years, President Obama tried to do so many things, and every time the Congress would stop it. And
that's really where...
So keep that in mind. And then there is always the Supreme Court.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
So just think about who Donald Trump might appoint to the Supreme Court, as opposed to Secretary Clinton. And with the death of Justice Scalia, It has become so important with the obstruction that President Obama didn't have a chance of even getting a hearing, which is outrageous.
Outrageous. Absolutely outrageous.
Mr. Khan said at the convention, you know, I doubt you've ever really read the Constitution, as he held it up for all to see, his pocket version of the Constitution that he carries with them, this immigrant to our country who
clearly,
you know, struck a chord with everyone, as we said earlier. But
and I understand as a result of that, sales of the Constitution have skyrocketed.
Well, I guess it's number one on Amazon now, the pocket version of the Constitution. So,
wow, that's fantastic. That's great.
What a terrific legacy for the young man who gave his life for our country.
Oh. And every now and then I despair for democracy, but this, that's so exciting, you know, and we're keeping it alive, keeping democracy. I mean, so many people at the convention were a part of that. And you know, you talk about electing governor and U.S. senator and Congress. There's also school boards, you know, and local races.
Right, exactly.
This is real grassroots democracy. We have people running for something in New Hampshire called executive council, for example, and nobody pays much attention to it. But there's some really good people who are running for that, who want to make the government accountable, have an actual democracy at even the local level. So I think part of the Bernie thing is, and he's talking about, run for office, run for state rep, you know, run for state senate and get involved in these campaigns. And that's, you know, a big part of the convention. I want to, you know, we've been, you know, it wasn't exactly a love fest there, but it was the unity. Well, talk about the reality of how much unity there is, do you think? Because it wasn't unified going into it.
Well, one thing I want to make sure to say is that the New Hampshire Democratic Party did a terrific job of treating everyone fairly,
yes,
bringing people together throughout the process. I mean, you have to separate, yes, there was at the national level serious problems about fairness. And we know that now. We always suspected it, but we know that through the WikiLeaks that actually was the case.
Yeah.
But that was never, and I can tell you, being the first person who ever sat down with the party on behalf of Bernie Sanders when Bernie decided he was going to run for president, sat down with Chairman Buckley and Sean Doyle, the executive director. We were treated fairly from the beginning.
Yes.
And, you know, Chairman Buckley deserves credit for that.
Oh, yeah.
As well as all of the members of the state committee, which Bert and I, because we were elected delegate to the convention, are now for the next 4 years, members of that New Hampshire Democratic Party state committee, which is why winning's important in politics. If you can run and win, there are things that go with that that can help move the issues and the those things forward, not just in legislative and executive areas, but also in party politics, which the more you watch it, the more you're involved in it, the more you understand how important that is in terms of setting agendas, deciding who's going to run for important offices in the state, and who basically runs the party. So,
and I have to say, one of my favorite political thinkers over the years has been the editor of The Nation, Katrina Vandenhoevel. And she's faced disagreements from some people on the left, and The Nation is of the left, certainly. She has always argued that the party is up for grabs, that we can take the party. And you know what? It worked. It absolutely worked. Sometimes, you know, people are skeptical. They're doubtful. They're cynical. They think, you know, we can't make any difference. The party is just, you know, the few wealthy people, you know, and we made a difference.
Oh, yeah.
We have absolute evidence that Katrina Vandenhoevel was right. The party is up for grabs, and you can do it, people listening, at your local level. Join your local Democratic Party, your town Democratic Committee, your city committee.
Absolutely. Go to your town, city, party meetings, functions, get involved. The county, each county has a party apparatus. You know, Larry Drake is the chairman of the Rockingham County
doing
Democrats.
Doing a great job.
And the Portsmouth Democrats.
Yeah.
And absolutely. Talk about fairness. Talk about someone who's a straight shooter.
Yep.
Someone you can trust.
And this is happening all over the country. And this podcast goes everywhere. And you can get involved in your party. Maybe that's one of the biggest lessons of this particular year. That surprise, surprise, we pulled the party back to its roots, to some left things. I mean, there's still work to be done. You know, it's not all, yeah, we achieved our goal, we can go home and forget about it. One of the impressions I had at the Democratic National Convention was the presence of Palestinian rights people. They had signs. I guess they probably weren't approved signs, but they did have signs, and they had stickers.
Yep.
There was a lot of stickers out there.
A lot of stickers.
And the party's not there yet. There was a little throwaway line in the end of the position on Middle East stuff, but it makes a difference. These people, they paid money to be here. Not only were they volunteers, everybody who went there, it cost a lot of money. It did. A lot of people had to scrounge to get the money together, but their voices were heard. They were seen. They may not have gotten it this time, but it will continue to move. And Medicare for All, that's one of Bernie's big things.
Absolutely.
Yep. It's not on the platform, but it moved.
It's closer on the platform. I can't tell you the exact language, but moving towards making sure that everyone in the country is covered is in the platform.
And that's...
And we've so-called Obamacare has brought us a long way, I think. It's not perfect, but, this healthcare system needs a lot of work.
Oof.
And, Bernie's idea of, and clearly saying, how come we're the only major country in the world that doesn't guarantee healthcare as a right to every citizen?
I mean,
it is unconscionable that the richest country in the world, with the greatest, could be the greatest healthcare system on earth, with the things that are available to people who are insured,
yes,
that aren't available to people who are not. That's not what this country is about.
No.
So we need to continue to work towards this thing. And, Harry Truman was the first person to ever propose it. And, the last time I checked, Harry Truman was no raving radical. it should be a mainstream Democratic goal. And I think at this point it is becoming that. And thanks to Bernie and our campaign, we've brought that idea a long way forward.
And historically, you mentioned Harry Truman. I find it fascinating that there was 75% of Americans supported nationalized health care in 1948, but there were then Democratic U.S. senators from the South who felt that, if we have nationalized health care, there could be black people and white people in the same hospitals, and they could be donating blood from black people to white people. And as disgusting as that is, that's the reality. But we've come a long way since then. We're getting closer to Medicare for All. I wanted to, aside from how great this was interesting, a view from a foreign reporter. There were a lot of foreign reporters there. I don't know if you were interviewed by any. I was, and they were just swarmed. I mean, they find it fascinating, incredible spectacle that there is for the world to see. I'm not sure who this is from, but this is from a foreign reporter. This week, it's the Democrats with their tired-looking cast members repeating lines that sounded hokey the first time in between guest appearances by beloved celebrities, all hoping the networks won't cancel. They've got the script, they've got the stars, and they're still trying to find the right narrative arc because the American public's disbelief is rapidly losing suspension. This is not politics, not as I know it at home. This is something else. This is pantomime. There's a certain look that I've been sharing with other visiting foreign journalists this week, and it is just that, a look, sometimes with the hands spread and a horrified half shrug, because sometimes there are just no words, even when there have to be, because that's just how we make rent. You got any comments on that? I mean, people see it from all over the world, and it I don't know if you have any...
Well, as we said before, I think, conventions have become less about real politics and more about theater, described as an infomercial.
Mm-hmm.
But it is the party's chance and the nominee's chance to speak directly to the people.
Yeah.
you know, the media will interpret things. But, you know, if people are willing, and I think a lot of people in this country don't pay attention and haven't paid attention, and a lot of them don't even care to vote or think about voting. We have to change that as well. But that if you watch, let's say, Senator Biden's speech or President Obama's speech and certainly Secretary Clinton's speech, you really get a sense of where they want to take this country. And I think that's important. And that's why conventions still do matter.
I think they do matter. That's an interesting point. Let's face it, Trump is an entertainer. And people in this country where we have one person as the head of state and head of government, there's this, I think, this sort of desire for a celebrity or like almost royalty. You know, some countries they have the head of state as a king or a queen, but with no actual power. Here we have it the same. So it's sort of a problem, that whole entertainment aspect, the celebrity aspect of it. But hopefully there will be debates between these two people. And to me, one of the problems with this cult of celebrity is people have come to believe we're powerless. A lot of people accept that we are powerless, that democracy isn't real, it doesn't mean anything, that we have no power. My sense is, from this convention, the 2016 convention in particular, is that gives lie to that, that if you want to get involved, you can make a difference. You can make, I mean, look at the, Bernie's votes made a huge difference. No question about it. And so, are we powerless? Do we have to surrender our, democracy to just some reality TV show star? Will people listen to that? Will it matter? Will they think about, Hillary may not be the most entertaining, I suppose. Donald Trump got the media attention for the last number of months because it was entertaining as all heck. Very entertaining. Cuckoo, nuts, dangerous, but he got the attention. And, what are your thoughts about that? A long time ago, I read how somebody didn't want to watch a Democratic event or Democratic debate because it would be boring. You know what? Politics isn't always exciting. It's not all about entertainment. Politics is not always fun. It's not always entertaining. What's your sense? Do people get that they can make a difference here?
I mean, it may sound like a broken record, but I think one of the things about Bernie's campaign is that it excited a lot of people.
Yes.
It was new. It brought new ideas. And as we say, so many new people came into the system, not just young people, but people that had been disaffected, didn't ever hear a politician from either party speaking like they cared or knew about what they go through every day in their lives, in terms of health care, in terms of all of the things about people on lower economic status or even what used to be called the middle class, which is...
We used to have a middle class.
Disappearing rapidly. Hopefully, our campaign and what has come out of it and our contribution to the new Democratic Party will bring us a long way towards those goals.
And I think we have achieved a heck of a lot. Thank you, Kurt Ehrenberg, for being here. And we're going to see if we can keep the revolution alive.
Thanks, Bert.
There's a new world coming near, singing loud and clear. Revolution. Feel that rumbling along. Good times roll, revolution.